Chapter 7. Getting Things Done. As an engineering manager, I always knew which engineers on my team got things done and did so reliably. These colleagues were good at breaking down work, realistic in their estimates, autonomous in unblocking themselves, and delivered quality work. When an important project came up, I ensured at least one of these engineers was on the project team. Building a reputation for getting things done is helpful in several ways. You will be given more impactful and challenging projects, which will accelerate your learning. You will almost always get more autonomy, as your manager views you as reliable and not in need of handholding. And your career will likely progress faster, with a strong track record of making an impact and achieving results, which is good for performance reviews and promotions. However, getting engineering tasks and projects done is far from trivial. In this chapter, we cover several approaches to growing as a reliable developer. 1. Focus on the most important piece of work. 2. Unblock yourself. 3. Break down the work. 4. Estimate the duration of work. 5. Seek out mentors. 6. Keep your goodwill balance topped up. 7. Take the initiative. 1. Focus on the most important piece of work. Whether you work at a startup or a large company, lots of things are on your plate. Tasks to complete, projects to work on, code reviews to address, emails to answer, meetings to attend, the list goes on. It's easy to get overwhelmed and feel like you're not making progress, even while working extra hours. For this reason, it's good to simplify your work life. Ask, what is the most important work? The single most important task on your list? No, really. If you could do only one thing this week, what would it be? Answer this question. Your answer is your number one priority. When you identify it, make sure you definitely, absolutely deliver that piece of work within the agreed time frame. Make a habit of always completing your number one priority. Make sure the most important project on your plate always gets done, even if it means turning down other tasks, skipping meetings, and pushing back on other matters. If you consistently deliver the most important work as expected by your manager and team, you'll be seen as a reliable developer who gets things done. On the other hand, if you get everything done except the most important task, you may be perceived as unreliable. After all, you somehow found time for less important stuff, but not the most important task. Learn to say no. Saying no is sometimes necessary. At many companies, software developers are pulled in several different directions, sometimes at once. If you're lucky, your manager protects the team, organizes requests from the business, and ensures developers are not directly pinged with requests to get something else done. Even so, over time, tasks stack up, like requests to debug customer issues, fixes for bugs the product manager just found, cover for an interviewer who's off sick, and so on. Usually balancing everything is manageable, until there's so much on your plate that you have no time to work on the most important stuff. For this reason, eventually you have to decline incoming requests. The more experienced you are, the easier this is. The sooner you learn to say no, the more helpful this skill will be, and it truly is a skill. The easiest way to turn down a request is to reply, "Yes, I'd like to help, but..." For example, if a product person asks you to look at a bug at once, but you have more urgent work, you could reply, "Yes, I'd like to help, but I'm working on implementing the Xeno feature, which is my number one priority. I can either look at this when I've finished my pull request, or I will have to push back on my commitment to get the Xeno feature done on time, because I can't do both." Similarly, if another team invites you to a planning meeting, which you don't have time to attend, your response could be something like, "Yes, I'd like to go, but I am swamped with work I need to finish. Would you mind sending over the meeting notes afterwards so I can catch up? I'd be grateful. Thanks a lot." You don't need to turn down everything, But when push comes to shove and you're at risk of not completing your number one priority task, then do say no. Better yet, reply, "Yes, I'd love to help, but..." 2. Unblock yourself. Building software is complex and often has unforeseen obstacles, like errors with messages that make no sense, about which a Google search offers no support, or an integration or API that doesn't work as it should. There are thousands of things you stumble upon that must be solved before progressing further. The larger the company, the more blockers are not technology problems. For example, you could be blocked by not knowing which team owns a piece of functionality you need to change, or not having access to a configuration to be changed. Perhaps you're blocked on waiting for a code review from another team, or pretty much anything that involves input from colleagues. Software engineers perceived as reliable are able to solve blockers faster than colleagues. How do they do it? And how can you get better at unblocking yourself when there are so many ways to get blocked? Know when you're blocked. The first step in unblocking yourself is the awareness that you're blocked. Have you ever thought, "I'm so close to getting this done, almost there," and yet 6 hours later you're still stuck on the same problem? You haven't perceived that you're blocked. Productive engineers catch themselves treading water and admit they're stuck. This can be harder than it sounds to do. You might be working and making progress with a new approach, researching a tool, system, or framework, but making zero real progress toward building the feature or finding the root cause of a bug. A rule of thumb for catching yourself being blocked is that if you go more than 30 minutes without meaningful progress, or an hour at most, then admit you're blocked. Try different unblocking approaches. When blocked, what can you do? The most obvious approach is to seek help from someone on what to try. But what if you don't have anyone to turn to? Here are a few approaches for when blocked on a coding-related problem. Do rubber ducking. Explain your problem and the approaches already tried to a rubber duck, an object or yourself. Verbalizing a problem sometimes triggers a train of thought which leads to a solution. Draw it on paper. Sketch out the problem on a sheet of paper. Visualizing it might prompt ideas for what else to try. Read documentation and references for the technology on which you're blocked. Could you be using a language feature, framework, or library in a way it wasn't designed for? Could you be neglecting features which are readily available to solve the problem? Check documentation and code samples for clues. Search online for similar problems. Describe your problem in various ways, as others might have used different terms for the same issue. Post a question on a programming Q&A site. If your company has an internal Q&A site, use it. Also check sites like Stack Overflow or relevant forums. Explaining the problem you have can also give you additional ideas on how to solve it. Use an AI tool. Input your problem and the fixes you already tried to see approaches the AI tool suggests. You might find helpful pointers. Take a break. Go for a walk or switch to an unrelated task. When you come back to the problem, you might see it from a new perspective or notice something you missed earlier. Start from scratch or undo all changes. If you're stuck on broken code to which you made many changes, go back to the last point at which the code worked and restart by making small changes one at a time. This might mean undoing a lot of work, but in return, you'll pay closer attention to the process and may discover the cause of the breakage. Get support to unblock yourself. Some blockers are due to a lack of knowledge from not having seen a problem before, while other blocks stem from a lack of access to the right people. Whatever the case, it's sensible to contact other developers who could help. They could share knowledge you don't have, or connect you with colleagues who can help. The easiest way to start to get unblocked is to tell your team, "Hey, I'm stuck on this problem. Can anyone lend a hand, perhaps pair with me on it?" Sometimes you'll be blocked by waiting on somebody. A special kind of blocker is knowing what you need to do, but not being able to do it for this reason. For example, you might want to push your code to production, but first, someone must sign it off with a code review. Or you need one of your dependencies to make a change to their API, but the team which owns the API endpoint hasn't responded to your email or the ticket. So you're stuck waiting and doing nothing. It's frustrating. The bigger your workplace is, the more common it is to be blocked by waiting on someone else. If you work with teams in different time zones, waiting on responses to chat messages and emails, code reviews, and design document feedback all go in this bucket. Learn how to escalate without ruffling feathers. The art of escalation is important in environments where blocking happens. Colleagues will ignore your messages, not necessarily because they don't want to help, but because they might assume your message is a lower priority than their other tasks. What is escalation in this context? It means asking your manager or somebody higher in the chain of command to communicate your message using the authority of their position. It can also involve reaching out to someone with authority elsewhere. For example, the manager of the person being unresponsive to your requests. Escalation can speed things up, but it also has the potential to harm relationships if used carelessly. Imagine your manager telling you, "I'm hearing you've been ignoring Jim on the marketing engineering team. Now he's messaged the director saying you're blocking the new campaign." You may have no idea how this happened, as you've been coding all day. So you check, and sure enough, 4 hours ago, Jim sent a chat message that you missed. Let's step back and consider Jim's reaction to your silence. Which words describe Jim's behavior in contacting the director? Was it necessary or an overreaction? It will certainly feel like an overreaction for most people, even if, from Jim's perspective, he did note he would escalate, but didn't check that this message was actually read. Aim to not harm personal relationships when you escalate. Good relationships are more important long-term than getting a task done a bit quicker. An engineer who likes working with you is more likely to help in the future if they don't see you as aggressive or as someone who makes them look bad to their manager. When considering whether to escalate beyond your team, discuss it with your manager and teammates first. What's the norm in your workplace? Do people go straight to their manager, who sets their priorities? Or are engineers more autonomous, prefer to handle things themselves, and know when to get their manager involved? My approach to escalating is this. 1. Explain. First, I explain why help is needed, giving context so they understand the importance. For example, "Joe, I really need you to take a look at this code review as soon as possible, as this is blocking the last piece of work on the Xeno project. This project's deadline is next week, and if the code isn't merged by tomorrow, we'll miss the deadline." 2. Ask. If nothing happens, ask why. "Joe, can you please give me an update on where you are with the code review? I appreciate you have lots of things on your plate. Can you tell me when you think you'll get around to it? Again, this is blocking the Xeno project, and it's a big deal at my end." 3. Warn. If still nothing happens, I raise the prospect of escalation. "Joe, I still haven't heard back. We need to move on the Xeno project. If you won't be able to do the code review by the end of the day, I'll be pinging your manager to request merging the code with no reviews from your team." 4. Escalate. And if still nothing happens, I'd escalate by involving my manager, the other person's manager, or both. You might work at a company where it's common to go to managers to clarify priorities, and engineers don't mind at all. At other places, this might be seen as aggressive and as making colleagues look bad. Aim to make an escalation a win-win outcome. When you have to resort to escalation, try to be nice about it so the other person doesn't feel like you threw them under the bus. And when the other person does what you requested, be sure to thank them and let people involved know that they helped. It can be as simple as a thank you in a direct message, an email, or a message to the manager describing how Joe went the extra mile to give you a hand. Aim to strike a balance between unblocking yourself while maintaining strong relationships with colleagues beyond your team. Help, I'm blocked. A cheat sheet. Here are some common situations that indicate you are blocked and some approaches for handling them. Planning. Not enough clarity on what to do. Missing information blocker. Make clear what information is missing and escalate to colleagues who can help. Not knowing who to consult for information about a certain area. Missing information blocker. Ask for help from your lead or manager in identifying these people, then make a list of points of contact. Consider sharing it with your team. Building. New language or framework. Missing information blocker again. You'll have to learn it, which is a fantastic opportunity to grow your skill set. If it's a language or framework, ask for recommended learning resources. If it's an internal framework, find the documentation, source code, and the colleague who created it. Start small by learning just enough to solve your problem before diving deeper in. Error messages that make no sense and Googling doesn't help. Missing information blocker. Consider pairing with a teammate after trying to solve it yourself. If the error message is related to an internal component, reach out to the team who built it. If you get stuck for some time, ask your team for help and fresh ideas. Puzzled about how something works, such as a tool, a framework, or some coding construct. Missing information blocker. Try decomposing it by drawing it, looking at the source code, and doing some research. If you don't make progress, ask for help from a more experienced colleague and explain what you've done so far. If there's nobody experienced enough on your team, try further afield. Ping people you know or ask your manager who to contact. Build problems like a build failing, strange errors, or unusual slowness. Missing information or waiting on others blockers. If you're feeling brave, read up on the build tooling and see if you can figure it out. A safer bet is to contact the person or team who set up the build and ask for pointers on debugging the issue. If there's a dedicated person or team for the build, they might need to do the work, so ask and then escalate if needed. Or offer to do the actual work of investigation and making a fix and only ask for a pairing. Not only will you expand your skill set into tooling, but the person helping you may appreciate you being so proactive. Missing dependency on another team or service that arises midway through a task. Waiting on others blocker. This could be an API not working as needed, or components or systems not being ready. There's not much you can do beyond letting the other party know they're a blocker, escalate, and pause this work stream, or try to do a workaround. It's a good idea to involve your manager, or at least inform them. Access problems. Waiting on others, or missing information blocker. No access to systems or data for making changes as part of your work. This is common at larger companies, where you might need permissions to access logs, configs, or to do deployments on certain systems. Your manager is your best contact, as access rights almost always go through them. Explain the problem and why you need access. You can also ping more tenured colleagues who probably went through the same problem before and should be able to tell you who grants access. If you don't hear back, escalate to your manager. Misleading documentation. Missing information blocker. When building something, a framework or system doesn't behave as documented. Oh, great. You wasted a bunch of time on it. Contact the team owning the documentation and offer to fix it. If you can modify the documentation and make the changes while letting the documentation owner know, then do so. If you need help to progress, the documentation owner is a good source of guidance. Outages or systems being down, which prevent you from working or validating that what you built is working. Waiting on others blocker. Flag the outage and escalate it. There's a chance you're the first person to notice it. Once you get acknowledgement, there's not much to do but wait and work on other things. Testing. Tests fail non-deterministically. Missing information blocker. These are tricky and require debugging to understand what's happening and why. Try pairing with a team member or ask in the chat if anyone's had similar issues. Missing test data. such as data to reproduce a test case or production-like data. Missing information blocker. Figure out how to get this data. It could be as easy as finding the right logs, or as complex as requesting access to production data, which may mean waiting on others or escalating. Tests are too slow. Waiting on the machine blocker. This can be a drain in the long run and usually isn't a pressing blocker. Still, it's a good opportunity to step up and look for ways to make tests faster and do some performance analysis of where slowdowns occur. Reviewing. Waiting on code review. Waiting on others blocker. We discussed this scenario before. Ping reviewers to ask for reviews directly and escalate if you don't hear back in a reasonable time. Seek support from team members and your manager on how to handle these situations. Merge conflicts. These are time-consuming, and there's no avoiding them. After resolving a conflict, it's sensible to retest your work and also the previous change to ensure nothing's broken. Keep pull requests small to make merge conflicts less problematic and to iterate faster. Deploying. Permissions or access problems. Waiting on others blocker. Find colleagues who can give access and escalate if needed. At bigger workplaces, there's almost always a dedicated team or process for approvals. Deployment is too slow. Waiting on the machine blocker. Similarly to slow tests, this shouldn't be swept under the rug. If there's a team that owns deployment tooling, contact them and see if they can prioritize speeding things up. If you can tweak the deployment setup, consider getting your hands dirty to shorten the wait time for deploys to complete. If the deployment cannot be sped up, can health checks be put in place so there's no need to manually verify that things work correctly after a deployment? Operating systems and maintenance. Bugs which can't be reproduced. Waiting on others blocker. For customer bug reports you struggle to reproduce, more information must be sought. This might mean adding extra logging to the code and asking the customer to try again, or requesting information from them. Either way, you'll very likely be waiting on a response with no way to escalate. Not enough logs to debug system issues. Missing information blocker. You might be unable to debug customer problems or monitor and alert issues. The issue is the system doesn't have enough debugging information for your needs. So add more logs, monitoring, or alerts, and deploy these. Then try again to debug the production issue. Depending on how complex the issue is, pairing with a teammate could be sensible. Outages. Missing information or waiting on others blocker. Systems your team owns go down, either due to an outage or because of an issue at your end. Alert your manager and team, and if possible, jump in to mitigate the outage. After the issue is resolved, there will likely be an investigation into the root cause and a postmortem. 3. Break down the work. As a developer, you get more complex pieces of work as you progress. To get these done, it's important to know how to break the work down, estimate timelines, and deliver on them. Think about stories, tasks, and subtasks. It's easy to go down a rabbit hole when breaking down tasks. You could start with a project, take the biggest part of it, and then descend all the way down to defining how a small component works at the coding level. Avoid falling down this rabbit hole by being a bit more strategic. For example, take a project to add two-factor authentication to an app. 1. Begin at the higher level. What are the main pieces of work to do? If these are sizable, they might map onto several parts. You can call these parts epics, stories, or chunks. Epics could include adding a two-factor authentication method, using two-factor authentication to log in, and handling edge cases and errors around two-factor authentication. 2. Once you have your chunks or stories, break them down again into tasks which are pretty straightforward. For example, a task in the epic of adding a two-factor authentication method would be to create the screen for adding a two-factor authentication code. Another would be to add links to this page from every part of the app where useful. 3. If needed, divide complex tasks into subtasks. For example, the task of adding links to the two-factor authentication page could comprise 3 subtasks. A. Add the link to the user profile page. B. Add the link to the final step of the onboarding flow. C. Add the link to the FAQ document. The easier it is to understand what needs to be done, the easier it is to estimate how long it will take. Break down the work into small parts, and then challenge yourself to make them even smaller. For example, divide the task of adding a two-factor authentication page into scaffolding, add business logic, tweak the UI, or split the work into a bare-bones implementation that only works for the most important user flow for the product, the golden path. Make edge cases into separate tasks. A good time to stop breaking things down is when the tasks are clear enough to you. Prioritize work which gets you closer to shipping something. When the work is broken down into smaller tasks, how do you set an order of priority? A good approach is to focus on an order of work that gets you closer to working functionality. The sooner you have something you can test end to end, the sooner you can get feedback on whether you're on the right path. Once you have a basic case in working order, decide the next priority and which tasks you need to solve to achieve it. Don't be afraid to add, remove, and change tasks. Some developers tend to work on what the task defines, even if they realize midway through that new work is needed or that some tasks no longer make sense. Don't be this person. Remember, the goal is to build software that solves customers' problems, not to close tasks. Tasks are just a tool for organizing work. Don't forget this. Use this tool, but be ruthless in changing and adding tasks as needed or removing redundant ones. If you come across new work or run into blockers and new constraints, then your original plan probably needs revising. In this case, overhaul the tasks. Don't forget that tasks or other ways of organizing work must boost productivity. Don't invest more time in dealing with tasks than on writing code. 4. Estimate the duration of your work. How long will this take? Is a question many software developers dread. However, it will be asked despite that. Businesses need to plan, and like it or not, you will be asked to estimate the lengths of time for your tasks. The only way to get better at this is to do it. There are some developers who say it's impossible to accurately estimate, and they advocate no estimate approaches. However, reliable engineers I know are solid estimators. They give accurate estimates and are clear about unknowns and delays. Estimation is a learnable skill. However, its challenges differ by the type of work at hand. Estimating work similar to what you did previously. This is the easiest type of estimate to make. Let's say you need to add a new feature which closely resembles some work you did before. This could be adding yet another page to a website or yet another endpoint to the API. You can realistically estimate the time for the new task based on how long it took last time. Estimating work you've not done before. This is where things get more interesting, because you don't have the benefit of experience to use as a baseline. However, there are plenty of ways to come up with an accurate time estimate based on the type of work. Here are 7 common categories of work and how to estimate them precisely. Number 1. Similar work to that of a colleague. There will often be teammates who have coded something similar to what you're tackling for the first time. You're not starting from scratch. A developer who's coded something similar can estimate how long it should take. The only difference is that you'll definitely take more time to complete the work, as you need to learn some of the context. If you consult them and break down their approach, you can come up with a realistic estimate. Make your estimate a bit longer as you're doing it for the first time. Number 2. Refactoring. You change the structure of code, but add no new functionality. If you've done refactoring before, you can use that experience for a baseline time estimate, even if the type of refactoring at hand is new. Alternatively, ask teammates if they've done similar refactoring work and whether they can share how easy or complex it was. You could also simply timebox the work. Timeboxing means assigning a period of time to a task and only working on it for that long and no longer. Number 3. Greenfield work using a technology you know well. In this scenario, technology is not a big risk, and you're unlikely to get stuck on some bug in the language or framework. The biggest risk is that business requirements are unclear. But if the task is clear, a good enough estimate can be made. Number 4. Integrating with a system you don't know well using a well-known technology. Things become a lot harder to estimate when you have to build on top of or integrate into a system you're unfamiliar with. This could be integrating with an endpoint owned by another team or third party. The biggest risk is opening a can of worms marked unknowns about how the system works. It may behave differently than is documented. There might be edge cases you did not think of, or documentation may be absent, which makes integration time-consuming. In such a case, consider prototyping first and making an estimate only when you've built a simple proof of concept that tests the other system or API. If prototyping is not possible, you can always give an ideal estimate, which assumes no issues with the system. Also provide a worst-case estimate, which assumes the system will behave strangely and that workarounds will be needed. A worst-case time estimate is high by definition. If there's pressure to give an estimate, provide a worst-case one. Some eyebrows will be raised, but it will help you make the case for a time box in which to prototype so you can give a more accurate estimate. My suggestion is always to build a prototype because it enables you to provide an accurate estimate. Number 5. Building something simple with a mature technology you don't know well. Let's say you're building a project with a stable technology of which you have little experience. Here, learning the new technology, the language or framework, is the biggest effort. The best way to get a realistic estimate is to ask an engineer who has used the technology. They can give pointers on where to start and help you estimate how long it should take to get up to speed. Treat their estimate with a pinch of salt, as they may underestimate the difficulty of picking up this technology. If possible, pair with a developer who knows this technology well, because it will shorten the time taken to implement your work and speed up your learning process. If you cannot pair with a developer, you could always use a time-boxed estimate to get up to speed with the technology. Make this time box big enough to go through some tutorials, do coding, and find out if your first few iterations of code need more debugging than usual. Number 6. Building something simple with a new technology you don't know well. New frameworks or languages carry more risk than mature technologies. There are fewer learning materials and fewer people who can answer questions. Also, a new language or framework is likely to have bugs. It's hard to estimate how long working with a new technology will take unless you do some prototyping. So, do this. Build a proof of concept with the new tech and don't make an estimate until you're confident using it. Number 7. Building something complex and integrating with a system you don't know well using an unfamiliar new technology. In this case, there are simply too many unknowns to make a sensible estimate. Things you don't know: the system you're integrating with, the technology, any unknowns. In order to estimate accurately, you need to reduce the quantity of unknowns. This can be done in two ways. 1. Prototype. You can make an estimate with learnings from the prototype. 2. Break up the work more. Separate it into smaller parts, each of which contains only one unknown. For example, a small task that uses the new technology. Build a feature on top of the new technology. Integrate with the new system. Wrap up by implementing the other parts. Breaking up this work may feel overly granular. However, with this approach, you can efficiently divide and conquer the unknowns. Your estimates might still be imperfect, but each estimate will be impacted by a single unknown, not many of them. 5. Seek mentors. Mentors are experienced engineers whom you can turn to in confidence with questions and doubts. Some companies have formal mentorship programs, but at most places, you need to find mentors by yourself, and it won't be a formal relationship. When it comes to mentoring, think not just in terms of one individual mentor, but a group of people you can learn from. It's great if you can identify a dedicated mentor with whom to discuss pressing issues regularly. However, you can learn just as much from ad hoc mentorship, including experts online. Aim to find mentors within the workplace whom you can rely on. At the same time, experiment with tools which offer advice for when you're stuck on coding work. These include developer forums, Q&A websites, and also AI coding tools. Just remember, the output of AI tools may not be fully trustworthy, so always verify it. We cover more on mentorship in Part 3, Chapter 12, Collaboration and Teamwork. The Tech Tribe of Mentors. Neelet DeMello is a software security engineer at Datadog. In her article, The Tech Tribe of Mentors, she shares the observation that a tribe of mentors can help you more efficiently than one person can alone. She writes, "Although our mentors can be multifaceted and experienced in many areas, one individual cannot specialize in everything. Plus, everyone's experiences are different and diverse. Tapping into this is a great way to learn and grow in our careers. That's why I believe in the idea of a tech tribe of mentors." 1. The dedicated mentor. I like the idea of having a dedicated mentor with whom I have a great rapport and feel comfortable sharing my lows and highs. The interactions on a regular cadence set defined goals to work on and are great motivators for constant improvement. To find a dedicated mentor, it is best to reach out to someone you have interacted with before, or someone whose work you admire and who falls in line with your goals. 2. The ad hoc mentor. Sometimes, it makes sense to schedule one-on-ones with people with whom you may not work closely, but whose work intersects with your path. For example, I would schedule a one-on-one with an architect to understand how better to approach designing a new service by sharing some of my ideas and getting feedback. Another example would be meeting with a senior leader to learn about their career journey and get insights on improving in the areas I wish to. These are no-commitment, ad hoc one-on-ones that might lead to follow-up one-on-ones if more ideas can be discussed. 3. The Internet Mentor. As weird as it may sound, I do have internet mentors. What I mean by that is individuals or leaders who share their career journey and learnings on their blogs, podcasts, books, etc. Over time, I have identified individuals whose writing style and ideas resonate with me, and the advice and ideas presented are viable to try out. Not every advice or idea will make sense to you in your context. 6. Keep your goodwill balance topped up. There will be times when you feel stuck treading water and getting nowhere. There could be several reasons for this: a tricky bug, a framework or technology you've not used before, or a tool you struggle to figure out. Either way, you come to realize you need help. Before you reach out to colleagues, keep in mind the potential implications for goodwill between yourself and others. Everyone has a goodwill balance. When you help others, your goodwill balance increases. When you ask for favors, it can go down. And when you interrupt people for no good reason, it definitely reduces. The more junior or new on a team you are, the higher your goodwill balance is. People are willing to help. In fact, they expect to. But this balance will quickly drain if you don't take time to solve things yourself, ask too many trivial questions, or frequently interrupt others. Avoid using up your goodwill balance too quickly. Go through the most common debugging and information gathering steps before seeking help. If a solution can be sought, do so online or in the internal company knowledge base. When there are issues with a framework or technology, read the relevant documentation thoroughly first. With code your team owns, look through the source code history and recent commits. If you are debugging a bug, step through the code, record variable values, note assumptions, and do a structured analysis of where something is going wrong. If none of this works, identify the person who might be able to help you and ask them. Go prepared when asking a colleague for help. Explain the problem clearly. Summarize what you've tried so far and what your next step would be if they cannot help. If they're busy, respect their time, as they probably have other priorities. In this case, ask them for a quick pointer. Regularly top up your goodwill balance. How do you build up your goodwill balance? By doing the opposite of activities that decrease it. Make yourself available to others. Sit with them and help solve their problems. Share your expertise to make others' work easier. When someone helps you and it solves your problem, thank them, perhaps even publicly in a team setting. There's a fine line between getting stuck too often without seeking help and asking for help too much. Of course, this all applies after you onboard to your team. During onboarding, you have a large goodwill balance, but once you've onboarded, don't take it for granted. Increase this very important balance by helping others. Avoid working alone when possible. As an engineering manager, I rarely saw it end well when less experienced developers or new joiners were left to their own devices for weeks or months. Usually, their work took a lot longer to do, and people told me they felt less productive and lonelier. In response, we decided during retrospectives to assign them a project buddy. But what can you do as a developer if your lead doesn't do this? Take steps to fix the issue of working solo. For example, ask an engineer on your team to be your buddy for a project by doing a quick check-in with you each day, reviewing your planning, and doing code reviews. If an engineer politely declines, talk with your manager or lead and try to convince them of the productivity benefits for the team. Sure, the more experienced developer will need to spend a little bit of time with you. However, in return, you will get things done quicker and also grow faster. Soon, you'll be able to help others on the team. Also, increase your goodwill balance on the team. The more warmly disposed towards you that others are, the more likely it is they will be open to being your buddy on projects. 7. Take the initiative. Some of the most productive engineers I have seen consistently pick up smaller or larger pieces of work which were not asked of them. This is called taking the initiative. Many of these engineers research a new technology to use on a project, be it an internal system or an open source component. They talk with teammates, get involved in learning about other projects, and offer to help out with smaller tasks. They're often the first to volunteer for any opportunity that arises, from investigating an inbound bug to giving a presentation to undergraduates. Engineers who are perceived as reliable and productive go above and beyond the call of duty. The more autonomous the culture you work in is, the more important this trait becomes. At fast-growing tech companies, it can be career-defining to take the initiative by getting involved in things not directly assigned to you. For example, at Uber, I observed a junior engineer become the go-to person for deployments after they set out to investigate and prototype a new microservices deployment system. The rest of the team was too busy to do this and didn't realize the new service would make their work much easier. Approaches to taking the initiative. Here are ways you can take the initiative to help your team and yourself without using up too much time. Document unclear things. Share this documentation with the team. Documenting will strengthen your understanding, show colleagues you're assisting the team, and might help a teammate or new joiner in the future. Volunteer for investigations. This could be trialing a new framework or technology, prototyping how to integrate a new service or component, and anything else. If you're less experienced, offer to pair with someone or ask someone to pair with you. Investigate interesting tools or frameworks your team could use. Share learnings with the team. Between your work tasks, investigate tools and frameworks available at your company or ones which other teams use. For example, this could be trying out a new front-end framework, a new documentation tool, a logging framework, a new build or deployment system, and much more. Give it a go and make a demo for the team with your verdict. Even if the outcome is, "We shouldn't use this," your team will see you're venturing beyond your role to learn more. Talk with your manager about upcoming projects. While doing so, express interest in work you're curious about. By asking your manager what's coming up, you'll get a better sense of priorities and what's ahead work-wise. You're more likely to work on projects of interest to you by informing your manager of this. You might also learn what to investigate in advance. As a word of warning, ensure you get your expected work done before taking on many new initiatives. New initiatives help others see you as a productive person, assuming you get your most important and assigned work done first. If you must choose between doing something new or finishing your current work, I advise you to finish what's needed.